In this Brew Local episode, we speak with Mike Hiller, head brewer and founder of Bavarian Barbarian Brewing Company in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Bavarian Barbarian is a 10-barrel small production brewery that focuses on sessionable, accessible beers that you'll want to fill your fridge with. Bavarian Barbarian has been around for just under 2 years and is run exclusively by Mike and his wife Kyra. Stay tuned while Mike clues us in on the logistics, rewards, and pitfalls of starting your own small brewery.
So why don't we start with the sort of the grand question and sort of what's the sort of ethos of the operation here? Like, what's the big idea?
Ethos? What does ethos mean?
What's your big idea here?
Our motto is the people's beer, and that kind of fuels a lot of the decisions that I make in terms of brewing and what it is I really want to do with this place. I want to make this as accessible as possible, especially considering the market that we're in. This is definitely a heavily a BMC kind of a market, and it's really tough to change those people's minds. Bullfrog does a terrific job at that. But I'm trying to reach a little bit further than the typical beer geek, if I can use that word. Bring more people to craft beer. I think that there are a lot of people who are ignored by craft beer marketing anymore, and there's no reason for that. I'm just given my background in carpentry and welding and things like that, and knowing, working in welding shops and so on, and seeing how many of those typical guys that work in those environments, you know, the typical blue-collar types, who are largely ignored anymore by practically any beer producer anymore, I think. I mean, you look at the latest Budweiser commercials and Miller Lite commercials, and they're, you know, happy, good-looking people in their 20s, you know, professionals and internet professionals and things like that, and the guy with dirt under his fingernails and calluses on his hands and ache in his back and everything, largely being ignored.
Particularly when you think about that is the classic beer drinker demographic. I mean, that's
absolutely. So I'm trying to change things a little bit in that vein, and just saying here we are. I'm making a beer for you. Here you go. Especially for Williamsport in itself. I think that this is a terrific city, and I think it deserves. I think it deserves to have a really good brewery.
And you said you definitely thought about making sure that it was in the city limits, right?
And sort of. Yes. And I wanted to center it here and be within Williamsport. And there's been sort of a fatalism that exists here in Williamsport in the last 10 or 15 years at least, where people in Williamsport tend to believe that they don't deserve to have anything cool, or if anybody starts a business here, that it's just going to be a matter of time before that quits. And I came here and we started this thing kind of to prove to people that that's not necessarily the case.
And you're from the area.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we came here to prove the opposite and show people that, you know, Williamsport does deserve cool shit, like a brewery and a brew pub and all kinds of other stuff. And there are a lot of us entrepreneurs around here.
What's you that? Guys are covering a lot of ground. Between you and Bullfrog, you guys are covering a whole, you know, like,
yeah,
like the whole almost craft sort of a dynamic. You know?
Absolutely.
So
I mean, these guys.
Small production, yeah. And really, you know, oddball stuff.
That's the big difference between production craft breweries and brew pubs, is that brew pubs have a lot more leeway. They can do a lot more in terms of different beer styles and so on. But when you get into production, like right now, I'm completely out of brown ale and stout. And that's what's bubbling away over here now. And it's just hard for me to keep up production with just our regular beers rather than constantly rotating our selection here. So they do a great job over here, I think, of making really terrific beers of different styles and so on. And Terry is very creative, and especially with the Keg's Gone Wild stuff that he's done up there. So, you know,
but yeah, before
so
a weekday night, like what I'm going to stock my fridge is like the local, You know, if there's a quality local production brewery, I'm going to buy my case, and that's going to get me through the week. You know?
Absolutely. But, I mean, there's a great place to go when you want experimental beers, great-tasting beers that you've never tried before. But for me, like I said, I try to get my beer out to the people, and that's why we've got the cases out to most of the local distributors here, the little guys, so that people can take it home and enjoy it.
And you're encouraging people to come into the tasting room here.
Yeah, give it a shot. That's it. It's really just a showcase for the beers. You come in, try the beer for free before you invest your money in a case of it, or before you go out on the town and drink it on tap all night long. Then you have a chance to try it, and you know what you're getting pretty much when you go out there. So that's what this place is all about.
For anyone who's listening who doesn't know, Pennsylvania, almost all the beers has to be sold either in a bar or by the case. There are a couple of places now. The local supermarket, Wegmans, carries a good chunk of your beers, if not all of them, I guess.
They carry the first three. We're waiting, I guess, for approval from the home office from Wegmans for the stout to be ready. Wegmans has been a trailblazer in the state. They really haven't changed the law at all. There's nothing really magnificent that they've done. They've just added a separated cafe in their restaurant where they serve food and then can serve alcohol. But they've got such a fantastic selection. From what I understand, all of the Wegmans around the state are really doing very well with it. They have a huge selection.
And they're all sort of craft friendly.
Very much so. Very supportive of everything that we're doing. So it's a step in the right direction. I mean, it's still, Pennsylvania is one of the worst states for purchasing beer. I mean,
you got
it's
you
so stupid.
Beer shipped into Pennsylvania through distributorship, but then getting it to your house is a whole other story.
Yeah, it's like you have to. What's that?
And just terrific breweries. I mean, they're, there must be 30 or 40 production breweries in the state.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. I mean, there are actually 8 breweries now within a 60-mile radius of Williamsport. So right here, even in central Pennsylvania, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But it's still just a ridiculous state to be buying beer.
I mean,
I know you guys are from D.C., Virginia area.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we used to live in Richmond, but we could just go down to, until midnight, you could just go into 7-Eleven and get a six-pack. But here you got to go to a bar, or you got to go to Wegmans over here. You can't just, there's no six-pack shop. It's got to be six-pack hoagie shop. We'll fix it someday.
So tell us about how you started brewing. Like, were you a home brewer? Or did
I started
someplace.
I started working for Legend Brewing Company in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
That was '97, and I spent.
And they're still going strong.
Yeah, they're doing awesome. Yeah. Actually, they just added it just a couple of years ago. They put in a 30-barrel system. They had a 10-barrel system, about the size of mine over here. They were brewing, when I was working there, we were brewing 3 batches a day, back to back, every day, for, 5 days a week, and then once on Saturdays. That was our normal production level. So I mean, we were putting out 30 barrels a day, but we were having to do it 3 times a day.
How did you get that job? You saw a listing?
I was actually an actor. Really kind of took the job to support an acting career, and a friend of mine from a theater that I worked for as a carpenter, he became the brewmaster at Legend Brewing Company, and at the time I was working for a local hardware store and hated it. I mean, it just got so bizarre because people would come in and scream at you over a 10-cent screw. I worked in the fasteners department, so I mean, people were just. It was just ridiculous, and every day I got screamed at because a guy, you gave me this screw, and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. But he knew I was there, and he knew I was pretty miserable at that job, and there was a job opening in their distribution department, just delivering beer. He said, why don't you come on over here and interview and see if you can get this job. So I delivered beer for those guys. Well, not technically for Legend. I mean, there was a separate limited distributor because you can't distribute your own beer in Virginia, but they had a separate distributor that operated out of their warehouse in the clinic. So I worked for that distributor for a while, for probably, I think it was 6 months. And then as soon as a job opening opened up in the brewery, I skated right in there and moved right in there as soon as I could. Just had a blast. And like I said, I was doing all of that to support an acting career. And I decided that I hated acting, you know, compared to working in a brewery. You know, I had a great time where I was working with my hands, which is always something that's important to me. And the guys that I was working with, John Wampler and Alex Coppola and so on, those guys are still there. And there were a couple of other guys who are no longer there. But working with those guys was just terrific. You know, we enjoyed their company all day long. We had fun. We enjoyed the work. And
so
for the most part,
what you wanted to do.
Yeah. For the most part, we looked forward to the work, or to working every day. And the kind of work had been the easiest kind of work I'd ever done. You know, I'd done all kinds of other stuff, carpentry and, you know, other backbreaking kind of stuff. So it was nice. So just lugging kegs around was kind of a break for me. I was like, yeah, all right, I'll do this. So that's how I got started with that. And then, so I worked there from 97 until 2001. My wife got accepted to Harvard grad school, so we trucked up to Boston. Ended up living up there for 5 years. And I actually interviewed at Harpoon twice. I interviewed at Cambridge Brewing Company under Will Meyer for a part-time place. He's really good. But for a part-time job, and I couldn't afford to just work a part-time job. So I think I did a couple of days where I went in there and cleaned kegs for them or cleaned a tank or something like that, you know, just to goof off and get a little extra cash. Will and I became friends pretty fast, but lost touch with each other. I moved out of Cambridge and moved into Boston and started working at this welding shop actually a scenic studio in the welding shop, and just completely lost touch with Will until I moved back here and I found him online somehow on Facebook, I think it was, and I was like, hey Will, long time no see.
I'm brewing.
But he was a terrific brewer, man. One of the best things I ever had, one of the most memorable beers that I ever had. He had a Heather Ale. It was a Scotch Ale.
I'm from Massachusetts. I was up there a week ago and just had his Heather Ale.
Oh, really? Oh, he's still doing it.
It was he's been running. I guess he had like extra kegs of things, and so he's just been rolling out like my last keg of this or my last keg of that.
Oh boy,
really good.
It was just so weird because I mean it was so interesting because I hadn't thought of it. I was like, well, of course, you know, Heather, why not? So he told me he went out to a local farm and I guess they mowed down the heather that morning, and he brought it in and brewed with it. It was one of the most fun buzzes drunks that I ever had.
I love that kind of stuff.
It was fun.
Let's just do it.
And it was light. It was just, you know, I could sit there and drink that stuff all day, and you know, the hop or the heather is mildly psychotropic, so it. I mean, you're not seeing little elves or anything like that, but it, you know, it's still kind of a pick me up. And it was fun. It was just a fun drunk. I'll tell you what. Yeah, good old Will, man.
So you went back to welding, and then did you have this dream you want to start your own place, or the?
It had always been in the back of my mind, even when I was working at Legend. You know, especially when I quit the acting and decided to just learn about brewing and, you know, pay more attention other than just our. Fill the kegs again, fine. It had been in the back of my mind, but it wasn't really, I wasn't serious about it until I started working for this scenic studio and I started homebrewing the Hammer and Ale, definitely. It was just a very simple recipe, and it was. I started out with all grain right away because it's hard to go from professional brewing to doing extract. It's like, this is a little, you know, it's not quite as interesting or fun. So, So, the first batch I did sucked. It was awful. I ended up like an idiot. I tried to dump the spent grain down into the disposal, and it clogged it up, of course. And but this isn't even the worst thing. It clogged it up, and I had to get down underneath it, and I took out the elbow underneath, the bottom underneath the sink, there was like a little shelf or something like that, and I couldn't get a very deep pan underneath it, so I had a large frying pan, I guess, that I scooped underneath it, and I had to wedge it to get underneath that thing, and all of the stuff came down, and it was all nasty in this, and whatever was in that thing, and then I tried to pull it out and not spill any, and I couldn't without tipping it up and spilling it all out, so I ended up having to actually siphon the stuff out of that.
The worst, like,
And
you say you should have started with extract.
Probably. I just should not have thrown the damn spent grain down the
you're homebrewing and welding at this point, and you got this dream, right?
I was happy doing the homebrewing, and I enjoyed what I was doing as a welder. Like I said, it was a scenic studio, and we had a lot of really interesting projects. The most interesting project was we built a Star Wars display for the Museum of Science in Boston.
Oh, wow.
And that's we built it so it would travel, so now it's been traveling all over the world since then. I think the last time I heard it was actually in Australia. I got to build the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, and it was so cool, man. The Bose Corporation, which is right there in Framingham, they built these seats with these base kickers in the ass of the seat. And you sat in this thing, you could get like five or six people into the cockpit, and then out in front of the cockpit you had this gigantic quarter of a dome that had this light show in front of you. So if you made the jump to hyperspace, all the stars started coming at you, and then, you know, you got attacked by TIE fighters and things. And when you hit a blast hit the ship or whatever, the base kickers in the seat of the chairs rumbled, and it really felt like you were... So that was awesome. That was cool. So that kind of work was really awesome, and I really enjoyed it. But working for that company was tough. They asked a lot of us. The last year that I worked there, the last 12 months that I worked there, I ended up working 10 or 12 hour days, 6 days a week. For most of the weeks, I think there were 8 or 12 weeks out of the entire year where we worked a regular 40 hour work week. Yeah. And
make a real wear on you.
Yeah, it gets old after a while, you know? I just got really tired of working that hard for other people. And I was 32 at the time, 33, and I'm looking around at guys who had been there for years, guys who were just 10, 12, 15 years older than me. They're not terribly old, but they look like they're in their 60s and 70s. I mean, they're broken down, their knees are falling apart, their backs are breaking, their hands are like sandpaper. Part of that is the lifestyle, all the smoking that they were doing and the gas fumes from the welding and, you know, going out to the Roach Coach every day, the catering truck that brought by the
truck wagon or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. They're brought by the, you know, that gigantic fucking, I don't even know what to call it, the nasty cheesesteak off the back of the truck, and these guys were mounting them down every day for lunch. And I was like, no. And I just didn't want to do that. And I figured if I'm going to work that hard, I'm going to do it for myself. Really wanted to start my own business and get the hell away from that sort of a thing while I still have, you know, 10 or 15 years left of me to work that hard. Yeah. So, and around the same time, Sam Calagione's book, Brewing Up the Business, came out, and I read that, and a lot of his ideas kind of mirrored my own thoughts about brewing if I had ever started a brewery and things that I wanted to do. I thought, you know what, if that guy can do it. And I even thought back to the owner of Legend Brewing Company and thought about Tom Martin. And I thought, you know, if that guy can do it, and Sam can do it, and if you know, why not me? Why can't I do it? So it just became, really, it became sort of an experiment just how far I could take it. I said to my wife, I said, you know, I think after reading this book, I think we can do this. I really think we can make this work. I said, I've got the experience. I know what we need to start a brewery. Let's give it a shot. She said, all right, but just...
Her over early. That's the...
Well, no, she, no, no, because she knows me. Because, I mean, in amongst all of this stuff, I had wanted to be a music writer to cover music. I wanted to go around to concerts and, you know, write articles about Government Mule and Widespread Panic and anybody else. And, yeah. And that just, that fizzled out. And I wanted to write a novel, and I started writing a novel, and that was no good.
Full of big ideas.
Oh, yeah, all the time. And I would start out with these things, and then it just never, it would just peter out in a couple of weeks, and then... How's that novel coming? It's like that thing on The Family Guy.
How's your novel coming
along? The character development there? So, yeah, and so I'd never, you know, did any of that stuff. And she was like, yeah, yeah, all right. And she thought she was safe. You know, write a business plan and we'll see how it goes. So I ended up sitting down writing that business plan, and I got so into it. And that had never happened to me before. I was constantly thinking about it.
And this, at this point, you were saying that you knew you wanted it to be here in Williamsport, or at this point, it was,
yeah,
you know, you,
yeah,
wanted it,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, we had choices, like, well, we thought about Boston, we thought about Richmond, and we thought about here.
You wanted to bring it back home, sort of. And,
well, I did. I wanted to come back home here. I have family in the area, and I wanted to come back here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still thought about Boston, but I had no contacts or no way to really raise the funds in Boston.
Yeah, I was going to say the real estate alone.
Yeah, well, yeah, that, and just, I just didn't have any contacts with anybody who had significant money. Here I do. I know family, friends, and so on and so forth, people who could have contributed and become, who eventually did become our limited partners.
So you wrote up this stellar business plan.
I did. It took me 9 months, and to be honest with you, I had to... and like, remember, I was working 10, 12 hour days, and so I'd rush home, I'd spend like an hour or two writing it or doing some kind of research for it, and then go to sleep, wake up, go to work, then, you know, so every day I worked on it, whether I, you know, I worked 10 or 12 hour days or not.
That became a novel.
Pretty much, yeah, but I couldn't tear myself away. In fact, there were weekends where I had to say, all right, look, no more business plan, no more brewery, just let's go see a movie, let's go down to let's go and have a beer someplace, and, you know, let's enjoy ourselves for a weekend. And I actually had to tear myself away from it. And even then, I was still, you know, I'm sitting there at the movies, and, you know, just,
how many pounds in years,
yeah, yeah, what, how am I gonna get this thing, and, you know,
so you got this business plan, and then you go and you look for investors,
right?
That,
well,
that's sort of the next,
yeah,
step,
I had,
right?
Started I started writing the business plan in May of 2005, and once I got it finished in February of 2006, I started coming down here once a month to do a little bit of my own sort of market research, talk to investors, see who might be interested in this. And I did get some interest right off the bat, so that just fueled the whole thing. And I took my business plan to Fred Daniele, who owns Franco's, who I mentioned earlier. I took it to some other business people around town whom I really trusted. People with a lot of experience, you know, decades of experience, and they read it over and they gave it their A-OK, and they said, this is fantastic.
Cool.
It was horribly detailed. It ended up being like 38 pages long or something like that. It was ridiculous. But they really enjoyed that. They thought it was perfect. So if I could publish business plans, I'd be all set as a writer, you know. But
so then you opened up in...
We finally got everything settled. My wife actually ended up staying in Boston for 10 months after this, while I moved down here to get everything started. Like an idiot, I'm thinking, all right, it'll take me 2 or 3 months to get...
The permits.
Just to get the money in place,
okay.
Just to get the financing from the banks, to get the funds from the investors/limited partners, I thought, yeah, this is going to be a snap, and it ended up taking 10 months, and she's freaking out up there because she had a shitty apartment in Davis Square up there and just was miserable. But and I was working as fast as I could to get her back down here. But so we just we finally got everything taken care of and was done at the end of May of 2007. And we had already picked out this space. We paid a half month's rent for a couple months up to it to hold the space, because remember we had those the Christian missionaries from Nevada.
Right, this is a former part of a car dealership.
This was used to be a car dealership. So we wanted to hold it and not lose it to the Christians. So we moved in finally in July of 2009. We were incorporated in June. I'm sorry, of 2007. July of 2007. We were incorporated in June as a limited partnership. We formed Battle Axe Incorporated. My wife and I formed Battle Axe Incorporated.
And what's the deal with the Battle Axe? You just love the sort of middle-aged sort of...
No, not really. I just
slashing.
No, the Bavarian. The name Bavarian Barbarian. That comes from back when I was homebrewing. This is back in 2003. My grandfather died, and I had always wondered where. I knew we were German, but I had always wondered where our last name had actually come from in Germany. So I did some digging and discovered that it's Bavarian. And at the same time, I had a big gnarly beard, thicker than this, and long curly hair down to the middle of my back, and I looked like a barbarian. I'd have looked like a biker if I wore a lot of leather, but I never got into that sort of thing. So I looked like a barbarian, and I was just drunk on homebrew one night. I was designing labels for my homebrew bottles, and Bavarian Barbarian snapped in my head. I was like, oh, that's perfect. Now I got to start a brewery. So that's where that came from, the Bavarian Barbarian. Now, where I worked at the Scenic Studio, a friend of mine worked there as well. He was a graphic designer. He ended up quitting, becoming a freelance graphic designer. But while he was there, he designed our logo for us, designed all of our labels for us. Since then, he now designs sneakers for Puma. So, you know, those high-end super sneakers. So he's hard to get in touch with. He's often in Vietnam or Thailand or Germany or something like that. Absolutely. So he designed all of this stuff for us, and I wanted some great, strong symbol for the company, something iconic, something that people can easily identify with, Bavarian Barbarian. And I thought about the battle axe, the double-edged black battle axe with the hand, but he's the one who really executed it and put the bees in there sort of the rising sun kind of a motif behind it there. So that's where that whole thing came from. I'm not terribly into medieval stuff or Dungeons and Dragons or anything like that. I mean, I like sci-fi stuff, but I'm not crazy about it.
Okay, so you're opening up, and when are you starting to develop recipes, and like how are you arriving at your lineup, and how does all that work?
Well, the hammer and nail I had designed when I was homebrewing. The first successful batch that I had, one that I didn't have to siphon out of the underneath the sink, the hammer nail, I just wanted a simple recipe. I wanted balance, just so I could start up some sort of a baseline with the equipment that I had. So I knew, all right, well, this is too much hops for what I'm working with, or this is too much grain. And it turned out spot on. It was exactly what I wanted. And I managed, within that second batch to really get a good beer. And from that point, I knew what was going on. And like I said, it was a really simple recipe. It's only three different kinds of grains and three different kinds of hops.
And it hasn't changed that much since.
No, it's the same three grains, same three hops, and just scaled up for this. And it's remarkably successful for being so simple. I'd read some recipes, and they've got 10 or 12 different kinds of grains in them, and 80 different kinds of hops, and and things. And I just, I kind of developed an affinity for simplistic recipes.
Well, yeah, was there any tradition that you look to? Like, are you?
No, not really.
Yeah, so you just.
I mean, just some of the stuff that I learned from legend. I mean, their recipes were never terribly complex either, complicated.
Something
you know, three, four, maybe five grains at the most, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I wanted. There are so many different kinds of grains to choose from. And you know, I think a lot of times it just becomes very muddy if you have just too much going on. So it just, that's been my approach really, is just to make it as simple as possible.
Well, are there sort of other breweries that you've always really respected, or looked to,
In terms of styles and so on?
Yeah, well, or just, you know, some place that you really enjoy, like that where it's maybe inspirational for your brewing. Anybody that really does it for you? Or you just love your own, you just like, you know?
I don't know. I don't really have a favorite brewery.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Somebody that sort of puts you on a certain track or something like that.
Not at all.
Yeah. You
not
just arrive at sort of like.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I put a lot more into consideration into what it is I like, and what it is I want a beer to be, and how I want to use that beer. That's a big part of it. I want my beer to be something that you can drink all day. That's, you know, my favorite time is like last Sunday. Baseball was on all day. And I'm a Red Sox fan, so yeah, too bad, right? So you know, baseball was on all day last Sunday. I had a day off. Kyra was in Virginia visiting her family, so I was all alone, and I just grabbed a bunch of beer. I had some of my own, but I stopped over to Wegmans here. I got Victory's Weissenbach. I don't know if you guys have tried that.
Yeah.
I hadn't tried that before, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Six pack didn't last very long. That went very quickly that afternoon. But
yeah, they put out such an amazing line of beers.
They really do.
When I was at the brew pub last, I think they had over 20 beers on tap.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean it was not. You know, I mean they do the German stuff really well, but then they also. Had any number of really interesting American sort of crafty kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, their hop wallop. And
yeah.
Just about anything that they do. I guess they're. Now that you mentioned, I guess Victory is kind of.
There you go.
I think. Well, you know what? To be honest with you, I'm turned on a lot by a lot of Pennsylvania breweries.
Yeah,
Penn Brewing Company. I really enjoy Erie
Trogues.
Brewing Company. Trogues, Victory, Weyerbacher, Stouts. There are so much.
Philadelphia Brewing Company.
Yeah, well, I haven't had a lot from Philadelphia. But you know, I mean, just you know, turned on by what was really going on here in Pennsylvania, and I'm not trying to slight any other state, but I don't know, we can get into that later about how I feel about all the beer that comes into this state.
Yeah.
Makes it on tap around here when you've got breweries. Yeah, never mind. We'll get into
that
later.
No,
but anyway,
a very valid point. I mean,
yeah,
that's sort of like your vision for this place is you want to be the local brewer. I mean,
it's not just me. I'd like to see more representation from Pennsylvania. It's like, so what? You've got a beer from Michigan. Big fucking deal, you know.
Yeah.
There's a great brewery right down here at Lancaster Brewing Company.
Yeah.
They make this tremendous milk stout. Put that on.
Yeah.
You know, big fucking deal. You got a beer from Colorado. Whoop-de-doo. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
You know? But here in Williamsport, you know, there are so many places that are bragging about, oh, we have all the important beers, or we have all these beers from all over the place. But you've got perfectly good beers that are brewed right here in this state, or much fresher. And a lot better, I think. So that that's a bone of contention with me. A lot of the distributors, the wholesalers out there in the state really are just get a big stiffy for anything that comes out of California or Colorado, and they aren't interested they aren't interested in supporting anything else. So, you know, they're not interested. You know, Voodoo comes into town and they're like, yeah, big deal, Voodoo. We have Stone.
Yeah.
Sorry, big deal.
Hey. And so were you thinking, like, you know, with when you put together your cataloging beers here, you wanted, you know, you got stout, and I mean, were you looking for? Are you in the styles? Were you looking to, you know, nail the style dead on, or just?
Well, I wanted to. Like I said, I wanted to brew what I like to drink, and not really nailing a style down. Like our IPA. Our IPA is not an American IPA at all. I mean, and people are telling me that it shouldn't really even be called an IPA. I don't care. I brew it. I call it whatever the hell I want to, you know. Yeah. But I try to make it more of a British IPA just to be different.
Yeah.
And I actually used British hops in it. A new variety is called Phoenix and Pilgrim, along with some Nugget. But and I threw in just out of 12 bags of grain, I threw in one bag of caramel malt, and it comes out in that beer. And it's pretty malty. It's got a good one critique said it had a malty backbone to it. Well, that's fine, and that's I like that.
Yeah.
I like how it turned out.
Water, like some of the really
Frankly, I think any monkey can brew a blonde ale and throw in a shit ton of Amarillo or Centennial or Simcoe or Cascade. Like, who cares? So I wanted something a little bit different. I wanted something a little bit more balanced. I want to use different hops. And I get shit for it, but I don't care. I mean, I might break down here eventually. I mean, we do, after all, brew the people's beer, so if people really want...
Dictating.
With
your mouth.
Yeah, I don't know what I was... I didn't know what I was asking for when I said that. But, the demand might really wear me down finally, and I'll brew a blonde ale with a shit ton of hops in it.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you want to talk about the stout we're drinking now?
Sure. Do you like it?
Yeah, no, it's really good. I mean, I think it's really well balanced. It's got, I mean, a good sort of roasted bite to it, but it's also still got some creaminess and
A
little bit of a hop bite, but not, you know, not over the top.
Right. I wanted something a little bit sweeter, especially around here. The exposure mostly is to Guinness, and I wanted something, you know, frankly better. I think. I mean, not to slight Guinness. I think it's a fine beer. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's definitely a dry Irish stout.
Like that.
And I wanted something a little bit more robust, but still drinkable. Something again that you can drink all day. And on this one, I wanted something a little bit. On this one, I wanted something a little bit more bite to it, a little bit more kick to it. So it comes in at 6.5%.
Yeah.
Which is probably a little bit higher than most oatmeal stouts, I guess, but. You know, not something to necessarily drink all day, but something that's perfect for this time of year, for the fall, instead of brewing another Oktoberfest.
Yeah. And are you trying to sort of keep everything in sort of a sessionable level, or will you do some
big beers? Oh, no, I can't wait to do some big beers. But a nice sessionable level is good for me right now.
It's good for the year-round beers, and then if you want to put out
something. Yeah, I mean, and that's something we've really got. That's something I feel like we've got to work into. I mean, we've got the nice sessionable beers. Get them out there. Get people used to us. And just kind of, I'm still trying to build a foundation.
Yeah.
I mean, and financially, we're struggling as a new company.
Yeah.
So that sort of prevents me from doing more styles and bigger stuff, because like
until
I said, it's been
until
we're really established, and I really have a groove of grain and hops coming in and beer going out, until I really kind of work out that production schedule and get everything really running smoothly, I want to just kind of keep up with production with what we've got.
And right now it's just the two of you all sort of doing everything,
just,
from brewing to marketing to all the accounting.
Absolutely. Yeah. My wife does most of the accounting. She runs the website and some of the marketing efforts and things like that.
But it's on you to sort of get out there and meet people and make
I do all the sales.
And get into stores and
yes.
the bars. And,
which is an adventure in and of itself.
Because
I am not a salesman.
Sort of
It's not, it is. When you know that you've got rent coming up in it's coming due in 3 days, and you don't even have half the money for it, and you're like, all right, well, what the fuck am I going to do? Your only choice is to go out there and sell more beer.
Yeah.
And I'm not a salesman. I'm just it's something I've learned to accept. But even not being a very good salesman, I'm pretty successful at it, you know, because I managed to sell a pretty decent volume of beer for what happens, for what we've got around here.
And I think there's also something to be said. I mean, you're the brewer. You're going in there. Any question they have, you're going to be able to answer it.
And that's something that I really work on. These guys are mostly used to dealing with beer reps from the distributors, the beer guys or whatever. And I think their methods are a little old, considering where we are in craft beer these days in this area. But you know, and they still have their own agenda. They have, you know, sales quotas. You know, they bought a bumper crop of Sam Adams kegs this month, so they gotta get their asses out there and sell it and do things like that. I come at it more, you know, more understanding of, you know, especially if I'm dealing with the owner of the company, of the bar or the restaurant, and sit there and say, look, you know, I own my own company too. You know, I'm not just your sales rep. If you have anything, any problem at all with the beer, you're talking to the guy who brews it, which is a very strong point. But I'm not aggressive either. I tell them straight up, listen, just give it a shot.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work out for you, if you're not selling it well, I'll buy the keg back.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stick you with something that isn't selling. I'm not going to take up a tap on your tower if it isn't selling, because it's not helping me out for you to have that on there, and it's certainly not helping you. I don't want you losing money.
3 months from now,
And I make that very, very clear that if it's not selling well, if you think you can do better with another beer, then do it. No harm, no foul. You know, I care about your business as much as I care about mine. And that's an angle that they're really not used to. And it's not really an angle. I genuinely feel that way. It's just, that's just something that they're not really used to.
Yeah.
So I think I have that going for me too, but I'm just an asshole in a white van that drives around like Cumming County and delivers beer every Wednesday and Thursday.
So sort of broadly, it's like, do you think your approach to a brewery, you sort of looking at it as like art, craft, or science, or is it?
Definitely a craft. I don't think it's an art. I never thought it was an art. There are some people who will argue with me up and down.
Well, that's
all day.
The beauty of the beer world is, you know, that there's room for all of that, you know.
Tell
us where you're coming from.
But I've always looked at art as a communication of the truth, depending on the artist's perspective. And I just don't see brewing beer as a, I just don't see brewing beer as an expression of any kind of a truth. It's beer, for God's sake, you know? It's not, I'm not enlightening people. I'm not creating some kind of a truth or anything like that. I'm not conveying my perspective on life through the beer, and what I'm really think of it is that at the best, what I'm trying to do is create an environment for people, a social environment, something for them to enjoy. I'm trying to create experiences, enjoyable experiences for people. And one of the things that I really, especially because I have the session beers and so on, I want people not to, I would really wish people wouldn't take our beers so seriously, or wouldn't take beer so seriously in general. But you know, pairing our beer with food is fantastic, and, you know, great. But I think people need to try to, and it's one of the most fun things that I do is just pairing beer with experiences. And, like I said, the stout I really enjoy at this time of year. If I'm out at a football game, or if I'm watching baseball all afternoon in the fall here, you know, playoff baseball in the fall here, that's a great beer to have at that time and to do those sorts of things with.
Did you ever consider canning? Because I mean, like
that's exactly what we want to do. And
you're talking about going to the game or something.
Absolutely,
like that,
and that's one of the first things that I was talking. It's in our business plan. So when I was writing the business plan in 2005. I was like, we're going with canning. And at that point, it was still kind of a revolutionary idea. I think the only company that was canning at that point that anybody really knew about was Oscar Blues. And I really, I was like, all right, well, that's a great idea. I think we're going to go in the same direction. Now, there are a lot more people who are canning beers. You know, Sly Fox came out with canning and stuff like that. So it's not, you know, by the time I get around to it, it's not going to be quite
right,
as revolutionary
the first
as I thought.
You know.
But I did have the idea early on. The execution isn't there, but the idea was.
But still, like, if you get the logistics worked out on that, get the finance together, it's something
yeah,
you would
absolutely,
like to do.
Absolutely. Because I want the beer to be portable. This is.
I mean, would you still consider doing bombers too, or what strictly?
Maybe. I don't. You know, I wouldn't throw it out.
Do you know, like a big seasonal or something in the bombers?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. 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 I think you know, at least in terms of doing the regular. Beers in our regular rotation, definitely in the cans, and then specials and so on at the 22s. But you know, mostly what drives that decision is that this is an outdoorsy area. People like to go hunting and camping and fishing and hiking and stuff like that, and I want them to be able to take a great tasting beer, good craft beer, with them when they're doing those sorts of things, and not have to worry about lugging bottles around. Clearing them out of their campsites and cabins and things like that, or lugging a keg out there.
And
you know,
you're very reasonably priced. Like when we picked up your bottle last night at Wegmans, it was great to see
a
very affordable. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So
and that's important too.
$8 or
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's important too. I mean, we're all getting screwed by the economy here, but this is around here. People are frugal. I guess is the way to put it. So you really can't. I really couldn't come out with beers that cost a lot right away. Really, these beers are meant to introduce us to the area and introduce us to our market here and win some people over to the craft beer side. And then, like I said, you know, we've got things to build towards, laying a foundation. And I do want to get into barley wines. Russian Imperial Stouts and whatever else. You know, I really like to get more experimental and so on. I really don't want to get into the realm of the extreme beers that people are putting out or the so-called extreme beers. I would like to be experimental and looking back at some, and you know, some of the things that I've seen Terry do over the Bullfrog. He had one that was called a Roggen Weiss, which is a rye wheat beer. And I thought that's brilliant. It's a simple idea, and I know that it's been done, but I was like, oh, duh. It's a great idea,
right.
You know? I'd love to do something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, but I mean, a stout has been done, IPA has been done. There's still a whole range of what, you know, what these things
right,
are.
Right. There's a lot of, there are a lot of, like, dead styles that aren't done anymore from the old country, you know, that, you know, could be revised.
Yeah.
Revived.
Improvised, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, changed to suit your taste.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My parents here in town, they live next door to a Russian family. And the wife, Yulia is her name, she makes kvass, homemade kvass. And I was like, please tell me how to make this stuff. But she, I guess it's an old family recipe, and she wasn't going to tell me how she did it. I was like, damn it. So I'd like to do it, you know, play around and make a kvass. Someday, which would be hilarious. It would be a lot of fun.
That
would
be
a challenge.
Seasonal thing to roll out. You know,
there
have been a few American attempts at it.
Right.
You know,
East End made one that I heard was very, very good. But yeah, I'd like to get to do that. The problem is that...
You just work with a local bakery, maybe, with some stale bread.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Sort of
yeah. Well, and what I think Scott did, he got the Fleischmann's dry yeast at the
totally.
At the grocery store. I was like, oh, perfect. All right, that's a great idea.
I actually brewed one. I talked to him and stole at least a chunk of his recipe.
Oh, yeah.
Turned out pretty well.
Good.
I did half of it with red star or something. I did half of it with sourdough starter, I think.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, getting into that kind of stuff, finding that's where I really want to go with this company. And hopefully we'll get the chance to do that soon. Like I said, it's been a struggle to keep going and keep up with what we've got going already. So, you know,
so are you making a push to get into Philly?
Well, we've got a terrific distributor down there called Gretz Beer Company. They're out of Norristown, and they're covering the four counties that surround Philadelphia. They don't actually go into Philadelphia yet, but they've been doing a pretty good job with our beer down there. I'd like them to do a little bit better, but you know, who wouldn't, of course.
Right,
but
right. They're on the phone with how many people a day saying.
Yeah, exactly. But they're doing really well. I mean, I'm very happy with what they do, and I've finally found, I finally found a distributor in Pennsylvania who actually works. I've been with a couple of distributors now that just didn't work out at all. Where they, and this really just drives me crazy. My feeling is if you buy the beer, you sell it, period. Don't give me any crap about what I did and didn't do. You know, they want you to sell them the beer and then go out and make the sales calls for them and do all their beer festivals for them and do everything for them, and they'll just deliver the beer. And I can't see that. Because if I'm going to go down to Harrisburg, or if I'm going to go out to Wilkes-Barre or something like that, if I'm going to make these trips to make all these sales calls, why don't I just throw the beer onto the back of the van and make these trips once a month and do it myself? Why do I need a distributor if I'm going to be doing all this work anyway? And at this early in our history, I don't have incentives that I can offer their salespeople. I can't buy ski packages. I can't buy Springsteen tickets.
And so you really have to.
There really isn't a lot that I can do. I don't even have a lot of. You're looking at the last three T-shirts we have, and we've had those three for like, you know, 8 or 10 months now. We haven't been able to buy any more T-shirts. So, you know, we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. We can't really give these guys all the support that they expect, and so they just kind of let our beer sit. They don't push it. They don't do a lot. But now that I'm working with Gretz, these guys, they don't do external sales initiatives with their salespeople. They don't allow a brewery to come in and say, "Hey, I'll give a lift tickets in Aspen, Colorado, for if you do if you sell for the first guy who sells this many kegs or something." They have their own in-house incentives and so on. They have a terrific marketing plan for every beer that they have. It's just all around a great company. I'm just blown away. I'm stealing ideas from these guys on how to sell beer and things like that. You know, they're very innovative and terrific company. Gretz Beer Company out of Norristown. Keep that in mind.
So now you've been in business for a year and a half now or so you've been?
We've been open for just over 21 months.
Is there anything that, you know, with the knowledge of 21 months as a brewery owner that you would have gone back and said, man, I really made a mistake there, I should have?
Yeah, what can you tell, like, you know, there's how many number of us home brewers that have that dream, so like, point us in a direction and tell us, show us the way. Like, what are the pitfalls and what are the...
I would say, number one, just in terms of business, capital. Lots and lots of capital. This is an expensive business.
Yeah.
And when you're actually doing the build out and so on, I did an excellent job with our budget and keeping things under budget, and we had a pretty sizable nut going into when we opened. But we had a couple of things happen, like our equipment showed up 2 months late.
You got all new equipment?
And it took...
Did you look at used equipment, or just sort of like...
I started looking at it when we were ready to start looking at it, and...
I know at times...
Through the whole process...
comes a lot of, you know, history sometimes.
There was that, and I was willing to put up with that crap, but as soon as I was ready to start looking at equipment, the used market dried up. This was around March of 2007. It just dried up. Before that, all through 2006, in 2005, all the time when I was working on the business plan and so on, I was talking to people and getting prices. They were constantly having breweries were expanding and selling off their used stuff, or there were still breweries that were closing. And selling off their used stuff. And And all of a sudden, there just wasn't anything available for what I was looking for. Excuse me, what I was looking for. And that was it. So I just thought, well, we might as well just go ahead and try to get a new system. So I changed the budget around, knocked off a couple of things. We had originally thought about making the tasting room here an actual brew pub kind of a thing. So we had sandwich making equipment and refrigerators and things like that that I had put into the budget, knowing that we might not do that sort of a thing. So I padded out my budget pretty well. So that's, I think that's a good point to make to anybody who's getting into the brewing thing. Price all of your equipment new, even though you know you can get it used. Pad out your budget with a couple of things that you'd like to have, but you can know you can get away with it if you don't have it.
Or you can get away for a couple of years until you want to go on to.
Right. So you know, just having more capital than you think you're going to need. We had plenty, but because the equipment showed up 2 months late, we had a lot of delays and other things.
You still have to pay the rent for those 2 months.
And we were at that point, we were still drawing a salary. We haven't in like the last year and a half, we haven't had any paychecks. There was that, and you know, the electricity, the heat in here. We have gas heaters, and at that point, we were paying $1,100 a month for gas heat, just for the gas bill, and it was, which is ridiculous. Prices have come down since then a lot, so we're not getting reamed so badly every year. So it was, we ended up, you know, in the space of about 3 months, and we finally opened December 28th, which was, you know, right before the weekend of New Year's. And then as soon as we got into January, then we had taxes were due for the last quarter. We had, payroll taxes were due for the last quarter. So we, and a couple of other things, it wiped out a good, like, half of all the stuff that we had left for our capital, for our operating capital. And it's been a struggle ever since to try to catch up with that. So definitely have a lot more capital. The other thing I would say is probably the biggest mistake that I made other than that was working with distributors without really doing your homework. Really check on with these guys. Talk to other brewers and see what they have to say. You know, ask for the horror stories. What have these guys done to you? And don't be afraid of going to big houses. Like Gretz is actually the Budweiser house down there. And I thought, no, I want to stay away from these guys because we get overlooked so terribly. And I found the opposite was true. The smaller the place, the more we were getting overlooked. Because again, these guys were bringing in, oh, we've got Ballast Point is here, you know, or we've got Russian River, the latest from Russian River is here. And it's like, well, you know, the latest from Bavarian Barbarian is here too. We're only a couple miles up the road, and they aren't doing it for you. So you got to watch out for that stuff. Just be careful of the distributors you choose to work with. I was more eager, I think, to please them and show them that I was somebody that they needed to work with, rather than looking at it as more of a two-way street where they need to show me that they're worth it to work with. What's that?
They're making a profit selling your beer, just like you're making a profit with them.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and look for somebody who's willing to work with you, not somebody who's willing to make you work for them. And I think that's the best advice I can give dealing with those guys. Other than that, those are two big things. Those are two major things.
Long,
you know,
hours. You said you're in
your
78
hours. Oh, God. Yeah. Well, yeah, that should be...
Yeah.
That should be pretty well known at this point, I think. Don't count on a lot of sleep, because you will lose a lot of sleep worrying about things. Just know your market. I hear so many times on ProBrewer.com with guys, I want to start a brewery, but I want to make a beer that sells itself, and blah blah blah, and I don't intend to have any kind of marketing. I would say really another mistake that we did make is not carving out enough money for marketing.
I was going to ask you, that was my question too.
We really, in this day and age, it might have worked with the last couple of generations of brewers, of new craft brewers and so on, but it doesn't work anymore. You have to have marketing stuff. You have to have marketing POS materials. They're stupid and they don't work the way you really hope that they do when you spend the money on them, but it makes bars and restaurants happy. It does to a certain extent work, and you just have to be smart about how you use the POS. The point of sale materials, table tents and posters and things like that. Just spend your money wisely. Be very careful with how it's used. Like, we've got an operation right now with a local restaurant called The Lodge, and they've just changed their new menu. They got a new manager. They just changed their menu around, so they've gotten some game in their menu. They have some venison, buffalo. They have trout. Things like that. So they wanted to work with me and figure out ways that we compare our beer, which of our beers best goes with those dishes, and featuring those things. So instead of just making a table tent that says, hey, buy my beer, we suggest people ask their server for the best.
Have them put it on the menu, say pair this with.
Well, they had just printed new menus, so we were kind of just, we were a little too late.
Like,
but
yeah, no, I mean, like, it's sort of a, the sort of higher end sort
right.
of beer
well,
and food
we
place
made
where
a,
they're like, this is what, just like you would go and have wine with dinner, and the sommelier is going to tell you what to have with your dinner.
Right,
there's
right.
nothing wrong with saying,
right.
we think this is going to work, give it a shot.
Right, right, absolutely. So when you encourage people to do something like that, pair your beer with food or try it with this sort of thing. And by the way, the waitresses have a reference card so that they can sit there and look at it. Well, if you're having the venison, then the brown ale is going to go really well with that. And that's been very successful. He, and talking to the manager, he's like, the other beer guys come in here, the beer reps, and they put up their table tents, and they don't do anything. We don't have a jump in sales when they put them up there. They don't do anything. They don't. It's just like, hey, we have Coors Light. Well, no fucking shit, And so he's like, if I do table tents, especially on our dining section, I want them to engage the people.
Yeah.
I want people to be curious about it. So,
or,
yeah. So we put a Meals Fit for a Barbarian on the table tent. Ask your server for the best. Food pairing.
So branching off of this whole marketing thing, how about like sort of the internet beer rating sites? Like, do you have an opinion one way or the other on them?
Jesus. It's a love-hate thing with those guys.
Sure. That's what everybody says.
I don't brew. I didn't start a company. I didn't put my whole future on the line here so that I could get an A+ on something. I don't give a rat's ass.
And like you were saying earlier, I mean, you aren't intending this to be a beer nerd, beer geek.
And that's
no,
just,
not really.
That's
I just
such a small part of pretty much any market. It maybe has a certain amount of influence, but for the clientele you're trying to build, you just want to bring the local folks around and say, I've got this great product.
Well, like I said,
you're gonna love it.
Right. I just want people. I want it to be simpler. I don't want people to take it so damn seriously.
It doesn't.
And
it's
I
not
have
an academic
with
thing
that.
A lot of times. I'm saying, like, people turn it into this sort of academic thing, and it's just
right.
It's beer.
Absolutely. And it drives me up a wall.
So on the wall here, there's an old, was that maybe a 1940s, 1950s time clock?
I guess 60s, 70s. I don't know. I found it behind Mom's diner, hanging on the wall. I asked her if it worked and if I could have it for a set deck, for. Decorating the tasting room.
But
it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't work at all. But the intention was that we formed a group called a membership, really, called the Barbarian Horde, H-O-R-D-E, in case the D didn't come out there. not the Barbarian Horde. But the Barbarian Horde is, you pay $100 for the year, and as long as we have them, you get a t-shirt, a hat, pint glass. You get a free Sixtel to use, a coupon for a free Sixtel to use anytime in your first year of membership. And every fifth growler that you buy is free. So, and that's how we keep track of it. Originally, I wanted people to come in and every time they bought a growler, clock in, and then, you know, of course, the fifth time that they did it, they didn't have to clock in. It was all set. But that doesn't work. It's completely gutted. All the gears are out of it. So we just write in the date of when people buy that stuff. So, and it's fun. It's pretty successful. We have a couple people who are onto their third and fourth cards already. Wow. So it's pretty good.
No, I think it's really nice to get, you know, people passionate about your company, and then they're the ones bringing the growler somewhere.
Absolutely.
And where did you get, oh, you know, right in town.
Yeah, yeah, we've gotten some pretty, I'm really surprised, you know, it's really kind of weird. Honestly, it's weird when you go through all of this stuff and you open up your brewery and you walk into a bar and restaurant and you see your tap handle or you see somebody drinking your beer, and it's like, oh, good, you know, somebody likes it, you know. And it's even better when people are you know, sort of fans, and we do have some fans, and I'd never thought about that. You know, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Okay, great. You like what we're doing? Fine, we'll try to keep it up. You know.
And you had said earlier that you had sort of written through business plan as sort of a pseudo brew pub. Maybe you'd have some food, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is that something that you consider?
At this
going
point,
down that road, or
no? At this point, I'm not really. I don't really care to do that.
Yeah.
I just want to brew beer. Going back to the theme of simplifying things.
Yeah.
I just want to brew beer.
Yeah. Is it right? Because you've got a brew pub, you've got staff, you've got lot of headaches. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as I can start hiring people, I'm going to hire delivery drivers and salespeople. And I want to go up there. I just want to be on a brew tower. Pretty much it. I mean, you know, at least for a couple of years, and it'd be nice if at some point I could just sit in the office and point to people and tell them what I want to do. But the likelihood of that ever happening is pretty slim. But
when you're interested.
Yeah, but I mean, that's probably 10, 15 years down the road. Like I said before, you know, if I'm probably going to be working my ass off for the next 10 or 15 years. So until that point, I think I'm okay. But
it's nice. I mean, you've definitely got enough space in here that, you know, you can.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the idea. That was the idea. Another row of finishing tanks back here. Another row of fermenters. Bigger fermenters. A bigger brew house eventually. Canning line's going to go up there.
That canning line.
It's already plotted. Well, it's not plotted, right. But that space is reserved. Space is reserved. But yeah, simplicity is what I really, and getting back to the thing about the beer websites is just, I just don't like people taking it so damn seriously. It's just, it is just beer, and it's, and I have to actually think.
But are
you
compelled to go and look at it, right? I mean, who wouldn't?
I do. I do every couple of days just to see if there's a new rating.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see if somebody has said anything on the forum and on the forums and so on. Just because, I like to, especially if somebody says something really positive, I like to thank them for it and go on there and say, hey, you know, thanks for the kind words. Or if somebody's asking about this local area, about Central Pennsylvania, making a beer tour here, I can go in and say, all right, well, here's where you should try. You've got one guy out on Interstate 80 in Berwick, and then now we've got Old Forge in Danville, and you know, while you're in the area, swing on over to Sealands Grove and then come up and see us at the Bullfrog and the Bavarian Barbarian. Things like that. So I like to engage them in that kind of a thing. And I like to see how the ratings are doing and see what the criticisms are and see if there's something that clues me in that maybe the beer, when they tried it, wasn't fresh. And then that's something I got to look into.
In production brewing, quality control, right, is really your...
Yeah.
You're going to live or die by quality.
Absolutely, and it's
not only quality control, but how other people are handling your beer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's what's important. I want to keep an eye on that kind of a thing. And we haven't, luckily so far, I don't think we've had any trouble. People getting old beer. People have torn it apart on style and things like that. You know, it's like, oh, this is
as
awful beer, undrinkable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, shut up.
It's amazing. I mean, that's basically every single brewer we talk to just keeps saying. stop paying attention to style. If you like the beer, fine. If you don't, fine. But don't say, well, it's a good beer, but it's not, you know, hoppy.
But I don't.
It's be an IPA or malty enough to be a stout or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, so what? You know, just,
is it good?
Yeah. Do you like it? Did it taste good? Okay. Then stop right there. That's all you need. You don't need to go run into the computer to do that sort of thing. Or, you know, and it drives me crazy too to go to beer festivals. And I made the joke earlier when I was at the Bullfrog, and I was like, it's the last one of the season. Thank God.
Right, right.
But this one should be good. I'm really looking for this. Is the Newtown Brewfest in Newtown, PA. I think the last time I heard it was about 2,400 people, but there were 60-some breweries, and it's the last time we had something like that, it was really kind of cool all day, and it was just, you weren't slinging beer after beer, and I hate those things. Because
you get the slow down.
You get the chance to go to the bathroom every once in a while, you know, or go out and try some other beers, you know.
Look, for a second, let's just go back to you were name dropping a couple of places. Are there some places under the radar in PA that sort of you want to? You said one guy is a small.
Oh God, they're
small
all
operation. There's,
around
there's,
here,
there's
a lot
voodoo.
Of them. Yeah,
there's
yeah.
Any number of.
Yeah, here in Pennsylvania, I think there are a lot that are underneath the radar that are terrific places. Like I said, there are 8 breweries now within a 60-mile radius of Williamsport. Starting out in the west, we have Otto's Brew Pub in State College, Elk Creek in Milheim. We have Sealands Grove in Sealands Grove.
We're going down there tomorrow.
Oh, good, good. There's Copper Kettle, which is outside of Mifflinburg, just south of here. And that's a. I think those guys are considered a Pico brewery. I think it's a.
Or yeah, Nano Pico. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A guy has a like a shed out in his back, and they're bottling. And it's good stuff. They have a really good Grand Cru, and they have a really good porter called a Potbelly Porter. And there's Old Forge in Danville. There is One Guy Brewing Company in Berwick, which might actually be changing names soon. I hope he doesn't do that. But
as soon as he gets one.
The guy's name is Guy Hagner. So
it's always going to ring true unless he hires another guy named Guy.
Well, he was the founder and he was the first guy. And it's a terrific name for a brewery.
Yeah.
But it might be turning into. But he might be turning it into Berwick Brewing Company or something like that. I don't know what the situation is, but it does have employees.
Well, you casted your vote, stick with one guy.
Hell yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, man. And then you've got us and the Bullfrog. What is that? That's 8. And then there's going to be, pretty soon, hopefully, the Turkey Hill Brewing Company in Bloomsburg. They're working on getting a brew pub started up out there. So there's a lot going on around here.
Are relatively small. I mean, none of those
very
are
small.
You know, big.
Right.
You know,
very, very small.
They're trying to push you guys out of business or, you know.
Right, right. And what's really cool is that we all really get along pretty well.
You could have a great time connecting the dots on all that. You know, like spend 3-4 days and just make, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something we would like to work on, too. We'd like to create the Susquehanna Ale Trail where people can come to Williamsport. You know, make a long weekend of it and just, you know, center yourself here in Williamsport or even in Lewisburg down south of here. And, you know, spend a day where you go out west. You hit Elk Creek and Otto's and Sealands Grove, maybe Old Forge. Copper Kettle really doesn't do any tours or anything like that. At least I don't think they do it. But places where you can visit and so on. And then the next day go out east. Hit one guy in Old Forge and come up and see us and so on and so forth. So, I mean, you could make a long weekend of it and just drive around Central Pennsylvania and drink beer.
And meet some great people, too.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a great area. This is a great area. I mean, just in terms of, you know, having worked in other markets and so on, comparing Williamsport to other markets, this is such a great area. We have a lot of support just because we're the local guy, for one thing. But, you know, I load up the van and I go around and I visit everybody pretty much once a week. And there isn't anybody on my route that I don't enjoy seeing every week. just every place I go, they're nice folks, really easy to get along with. Like right now, like I said, we're out of brown ale and stout, so last week I had to say, look, I'm out of brown ale until next week. Oh, all right, we'll take a keg of the Hammer and Ale, and as soon as you get that in, we'll, you know. So they're really willing to put up with a lot of, they're willing to give me some leeway, you know. Yeah, they're willing to understand that, that shit happens sometimes, and so I got to catch up with it. But it's been absolutely terrific.
I mean, being low on beer, I mean, that's a lot better problem than, hey, you can't get any of this stuff out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got an 8-month-old stout up, still trying to unload.
Yeah. Yeah, brown ale and stout typically only last, even without a big sale to Gretz, typically only last about 3 weeks before it's completely gone. So I guess that's a good a good thing, you know. I'd like it to last maybe a week before it's all gone. Yeah. I mean, we'll get to a point where it's brewing it every single week. But I, you know, by and large, I think we're doing pretty well so far.
How often do you brew?
Each beer I brew pretty much once a month, or once every 3 weeks or so. Production's starting to increase a little bit more. But it's a 10-barrel system, and I managed to squeeze out about 10 or 11 barrels of usable beer every time. So after all the losses and the spillage and things like that. So pretty happy about that. We don't filter our beer, which causes a lot of it to not end up down the drain. So
was that a mindful decision, or I mean, like,
no, we
just sort of,
it was kind of an accident. We had a filter, and we started using a filter when we first started brewing. It was the Hammer and Ale and the Brown Ale. They were the first ones, the Headbangers Brown Ale, and they were the first ones to go through. And we started filtering right away. But we were using an Irish ale yeast, which is from Y Yeast, and which is a medium flock beer or a yeast. And I ended up going through pads after pads of stuff. It was just, it was really clogging the hell out of it. And at one point, for some reason, and at the same, a couple of things happened. I'm kind of a big guy. And when I was cranking down the filter, I would crank it down way too hard. I ended up crushing it so hard that it would, the beer would only go through half of the pads and then seek another way out instead of going through it. So I wasn't filtering it as well as I thought. So we ended up with the Hammer and Ale ended up coming out with it was really hazy. And after a week, it really turned into a strong diacetyl flavor coming out of it. And I thought, holy shit. So so I ended up dumping that batch. And then the first IPA that we brewed, we filtered through there. And it came out hazy as hell again. I was like, what in the hell is going on? I ended up filtering it 3 times. And it filtered almost all of the hop flavor out of it. And I couldn't just release it as well as batter IPA, because that isn't what I wanted it to taste like. So we called it Scrap Metal Pale Ale and sold it for $50 a keg and just got it out of here. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't what I wanted. Yeah, it was very dry. It was very plain. Fortunately, there's a local fraternity that ended up buying a couple of kegs of it and taking it to a big party. So yeah.
God bless fraternities.
So, yeah. It was still 7% alcohol, and at $50 a keg, they were like, yeah, we're right on that, man. So they got rid of a good, healthy amount of that for us. But I called up, somebody had suggested what's called the Brewing Science Institute. It's a new yeast company out of Colorado. Terrific company. And these guys, talking to them, they suggested the British Ale 3. It's based on Y Yeast's. British Ale 3, but it's their own culture and so on, which is a high flock yeast. And the guy told me, he says, you know, frankly, I don't think you're going to need your filter anymore. He said, but give it a shot. Just here's what you do. And I admittedly hadn't been doing this. I've been cooling it for 24 hours and then just At 35 degrees for 24 hours and then just rushing it right over.
Just on the CO2 wouldn't come out when you ran through the filter.
Right. He said, come down to 55 degrees for 24 hours, do your VDK rest, and then let it sit for at least 2 days at 35 degrees. And he said, this stuff will clear out magnificently.
Yeah, right.
So it did, and has been ever since. And I filtered it one time after that.
The headache of the filtering pads.
Right. And I filtered it one time after that, it ended up being just a little bit more clear than it was when it was coming out of the sample cock on the tank. So I thought, well, let's see what happens if we don't use the filter at all. And it turned out so brilliant and clear and flavor. There's more flavor, more aroma.
Screw it. When we had the pale ale last night, it has a nice light fruitiness to it. That mm-hmm. I sort of as we said, well, it's not an American. You know, it's definitely more of an Englishy.
Right.
Which is really nice because there are so many places that just use a super clean yeast. And,
mm-hmm. Or isinglass, or they filter the shit out of everything. And so. Like I said, we didn't set out to be a non-filtering brewery, but it just kind of worked out that way. It turned out nice, and he said, this is the way you really want to take care of this yeast. Sent me an instruction thing, and it made sense.
So you're doing multi-generation?
Yeah, that first bash, that first culture that he sent me lasted over a year.
Wow.
And we had 30 generations on it, and
mutation.
Not that I could tell. I don't really know. I don't have a microscope or anything.
But it didn't take on this whole new flavor profile.
No, it was all clear. Yeah, and I kept eye on it. I tested batch to batch.
Yeah.
Keeping some back and seeing, all right, well, this is the last batch. This is a new batch, and they tasted exactly the same.
Yeah. So consistent.
The same clarity, and we had a decent level of consistency all the way through. And the only reason I bought a new culture was I thought, well, it's a year, and let's see. Yeah. But I wanted to see, is there really a difference between a fresh culture and the last batch? And the older culture did start getting a little bit more hazy, but that was it.
Yeah.
The flavor was pretty much the same, and nothing had really changed.
And clearly you've got your sanitation and everything else down if you can do 30 batches without cropping up or getting in.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. I'm really a cowboy when it comes to brewing. I'm not anal in the slightest about being clean. I mean, it's a mess over there. But
we've seen a lot worse.
even with the yeast, I'm a little rough on it compared to what he suggested that I do. He told me to go through the whole, washing the yeast thing and run it, and I don't do that. I don't screw with it. I do feed it. But that's about the extent of it. And I can, I like this, the what's bubbling right now, that sat in the cooler for 3 weeks. Just sat in there, fed it once, put it in there, and it starts right up again. It's a tough yeast. And I noticed that when I worked at Legend, too. The yeast is a lot tougher than people give it credit for. And the beer is a lot tougher than people give it credit for.
And you use the same strain for all your beers? It's just your house? Except, the Saison we're trying.
Yeah. For the most part, just the main beers. Yeah. We had a Dunkelweizen last fall.
Your wife really loved it.
Yeah. Well, we got the yeast strain came from the Ondex Brewery in Germany, which is where Brewing Science Institute had gotten their original culture from. And he told me, you're going to be one of the first breweries in the U.S. that has this strain from us. I thought, well, okay, great. And so I brewed up this Dunkelweizen, and it turned out really good. It was all German malts and German hops and some honey malt. And I threw it in there and let the yeast do its thing, and I fermented it at a lower temperature rather than a higher temperature because I didn't want the bananas and bubblegum and stuff like that. And it came out with a pretty prominent clove flavor to it and a spicy character. And it turned out so good. It was one of the best beers I think we've brewed here.
So you're thinking about...
And I can't even really honestly take credit for it because the yeast did all the damn work. It was the yeast that was the best.
Are you thinking about getting that in the regular lineup? Or?
What we'd like to do is actually brew a different wheat beer for each season once we get rolling with it. So square feet wheat in the summertime can be a Hefeweizen, or eventually I'd really like to do a Berliner Weisse for the summer with that. Notting Head Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Have you tried that stuff?
Yeah, they do a ton of low alcohol flavor.
That Berliner Weisse, I was like, oh my God, clear as a bell too when you looked at it. Oh geez, that was good stuff. I ran into him at a festival this summer.
Actually, if you want, I've got a bottle of Berliner Weisse I did in the car.
Well, thank you very much for spending the afternoon giving us some beers and talking about your experiences with this brewery.
Ain't no thing. Thank you. Thanks for having me, or coming by.